Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, My Crumbling Audio is proudly presented by Squared Circle Entertainment. Join the SCE Worldwide Movement on Facebook, and let's conquer the globe together. Greetings, heathens and harlots, and welcome to this episode of My Crumbling Audio, the only show that gives no indication in the title that we talk about butt stuff. As always, I'm the game-streaming, day-dreaming, crises-pleasing host of this shindig, Krum. Let's chat a while, shall we? Words cannot properly express the love I have for you, my dear heathens and harlots. Well, show's over. Nah, seriously, you beautiful pervs broke my brain with the amount of love you showed the last episode, and I am so stupidly grateful that I actually wrote in that beginning joke. You made my mind not work right. I appreciate every single one of you. May you get that high score, elusive win, mind-blowing O, or anything else your twisted little hearts desire. This week, we've got 5 or 6 tasty treats to sort through, so let's get ourselves strapped on and ready to ride. So 5 episodes in, and I feel like we've gotten to know each other pretty well, I'd say. No? We have what I'd say is a good communication arrangement. I make the episodes happen, you choose to listen, or not, but hey, let's not make me try and cry. And all is well between us. Communication is easy. At least it should be, because we're all human and we all have the ability to make known what we want and what we don't want. I'm pretty sure you can see where this little section is going. Why did the APAG, that's Adult Performers Actors Guild, have to create a performer's consent contract for adult actors? This is the industry where sexual liberty should be most celebrated, isn't it? Fuck yeah, it should be, Krum, is the only appropriate response. But after doing a bit of research, both the fun kind and the very not fun kind, I've come to some rather disturbing and hopeful conclusions at the same time. The consent form that I mentioned came about because of adult star Nikki Bentz. I was super ready to heap praise on her for championing a cause like this, and then I got the details. Now, I'm still super ready to heap praise on her, but I wish it was for what she did, not what she got done to her. Now, all of this is allegedly because I honestly can't find whether or not the court proceedings are over, and I honestly can't afford a lawyer. Back in 2016, Bentz was signed on to be a contract performer with everyone's favorite Double Z, Brazzers. So far, so good. Fast forward a few months, and her relationship with the company ended after requesting to end a shoot with a particular fuckbag of a director who won't get a name mentioned from me. Allegedly, stuff happened in the shoot that shouldn't have, and when Bentz called time out, said fuckbag director choked her as a punishment, maybe? Fuck all that with a sideways chainsaw, my friends. As soon as Bentz went public with the story, a few other performers also shared less than consensual stories about Mr. Fuckbag Director. Now, I rag on pseudo BDSM shit all the time. What's up, 50 Shades of Shitty Writing? And I gotta do it yet again. Apparently, the scene Bentz was involved in turned into a rape scene at the behest of the director. This is all allegedly, of course, but that is not the time or the place to spring that on anybody. I have no idea how the male performer reacted, but my understanding is that he allegedly went along with it. You can claim heat of the moment, but it's fucking stupid and fucking wrong. The thing that everybody outside of BDSM, and yes, even porn producers can fall into this, fails to understand is that BDSM is 1,000,000,000% founded in consent. Hell, the reputable BDSM porn producers stopped filming rape fantasy flicks, and the major clip sites, you know, the black and orange one, refused to even host them. I have watched many, many hours of BDSM content, and my absolute favorite part is the part at the end where all the performers sit down under a blanket and hug it out and talk about their experience, because it was consensual. What happened to Nikki Bentz is inexcusable in absolutely every single fucking way, but thankfully she's okay, and we've got rules in place to keep every adult performer safe. Speaking of the APAG consent form, I've actually linked to it in the description, and it's pretty solid reading. I know many in the BDSM community and many other independent porn companies actually make their own contracts for their private and professional encounters, so the content form didn't surprise me in the slightest. However, it did surprise Crises. It's no big secret that I do a fair amount of research for this show, because otherwise it would be me attempting to sound coherent while yelling in the corner of my bedroom. Sometimes, I take that research out of the corner and onto the couch when I'm cuddling with the wife. So when she saw me reading a list, which is kind of what the form looks like, she was intrigued because for some reason she loves lists. I don't know, I've heard of some weird kinks before, but vertical organization is a new one for me. Now, you have to understand, Crises is innocent at best, downright sheltered at worst. Surprising, given that we used to work at the same goth club and attended various iterations of fetish events. Sadly not together, but you know, you get my point. Sometimes I forget that. So I showed her the list, and I got some questions. The first page lists pegging as an available option for a boy-girl scene. It's become part of my vocabulary as of late because of a certain subreddit where it's all the rage. Obviously, we haven't tried it, because until a few days ago, Crises had no idea what it was. When I explained it was basically, you fuck me with a strap on, her eyes widened a bit, and yet all she said was, okay, and I am going to hold on to this glimmer of hope with every fiber of my being. And I ask all of you heathens and harlots to pray to whatever deity it is for my eventual satisfaction. Anywho, a little further down the list, there are options for trans or gay performers, and it lists an option for versatile. The easiest way to explain that one is by comparing it to the BDSM term switch. Crises got that one right away. The last page is where all the specifics are listed and where Crises had the most questions. Thankfully, as you all know, I'm somewhat of an expert. Until there's a typo or something new that even I haven't heard of, one of the checkbox lists sex toys, CBD or chastity. Now, chastity is easy enough to figure out. Plus, I honestly think I showed her a cock cage a few weeks ago when we went to a sex toy shop. CBD, I'm pretty sure, means CBT, which, after I explained to her, means cock and ball torture. Maybe cock and ball degradation for the D, not sure. Crises just looked at me and said, oh, the stuff you like. My wife actually does take notes, heathens and harlots. Score one for the crumb. The last question she had was probably the most self-explanatory. Self-exploratory, maybe? One on the list? It says, sex toys, fucking machines. It occurs to me, at that point in time, that my wife has never even seen a Sibian or a motor bunny, let alone heard of them. It also occurs to me that it could mean one of those badass ones that kink.com has where performers lay down and it, you know, drills them. In my extreme eloquence, I told her it's like the mechanical bull at a bar, just with a well-placed horn. It's clear from this experience that we need more sex toy shopping in our lives. Now that you know some of my perverse proclivities, I want to share something equally as personal with you. I kind of debated adding this segment to the show, but I needed the vocal therapy, so I got to thank you in advance for hearing me out. Or if you want, skip like about 2 minutes, whatever, it's all good. Now, I love me some Fortnite, specifically Battle Royale. Like, I love it. Like, I bought the T-Rex skin because he's cute. But I admit, I am not very good at the game, and when I'm not playing, I'm okay with that. Like, I'm happy to tell you guys, I'm not good at it. For statistical evidence, I have one solo win in something like 540 matches. I got said win in match number 445. Zero duo and zero squad wins. I do last quite a long time. I got tons of top 10s and 25s. That kind of sounds like I'm improving as a player, doesn't it? We're all wrong. See, what happens during a game is that I run like a bitch, and I hide whenever I can. And I once spent a game gliding around from the second I jumped out of the bus. Alright, granted, it was for one of those stay alive in squads challenges, and I didn't have a squad, but still, it was a bitch move, Mr. Crumb. That part I'm actually kind of proud of, because I completed the challenge and even got some kills with the low-level weapons I was able to scavenge for places that nobody else went. I want to talk about the running away and not improving my skills. Every single guide to Fortnite tells you to be aggressive, expect to lose, but prepare to win. That's a damn good mentality to have, isn't it? Forget the fact that I have the aim of a potato and the reflexes of a sloth on weed. I'm not getting any better by running away. So why exactly am I telling you all this? Well, some folks say that video games are a microcosm of life. Normally, I use video games to escape the reality of being a sleep-deprived parent with a successful podcast that he doesn't want to work on right at the moment. You guys know I always come back to the podcast because you heathens and harlots have shown support that frankly I didn't expect, so thank you. Sidebar over. Back to the microcosm thing. I personally get very anxious whenever there's a confrontation incoming. That's in real life. I get jittery on my left side and I become very slow to respond. Hence, for most of my life, I've avoided confrontation. Thankfully, I don't mean fighting, like physical fighting. I mean just anything where I'd be challenged outside of a normal, accepted challenge. Like, I don't run away from tests, but I do run away when somebody wants to, like, yell at me and stuff. That's what I mean. So there I was, outside of Tomato Town, building away. Last 12 people, two guys pushed me, and I, in my infinite wisdom, decided to make my character run for the next minute and a half to avoid the fight. I had materials, weapons, I think maybe even a shield or two, and I can't remember exactly. And I ran farther than even Flock of Seagulls would find acceptable. Boom. Realization hit. This video game encounter was playing out exactly as I'd lived my life, and fucking hell did I hate it. I was running away to avoid a bad situation, in this case dying out of the top 10. Want to know what happened? I died. In the top 10, but I still died. Made a stupid mistake and left myself open to the barrage of bullets that hit my character's face. Same result as would have happened before I ran. Or was it, though? What if I'd stayed to fight? Might I have died? Fuck yeah, it's me we're talking about. Might I have won? Sure. You know, I had what I needed to make them work for the kill. This is sort of my own personal call to arms that I'm making public. I need to change my gaming strategy, and mayhaps I need to start with my life strategy. On to happier topics, Mr. Crumb. Murder, revenge, and reboots. Are there any three more pleasant topics in the world of horror movies? What if I told you that all three of these things can be yours on October 19th? That's right. Later this year, you get the much-anticipated reboot of The Crow! Huh? It's not much anticipated? It's only sorta anticipated because James O'Barr is overseeing production? Oh, well then. Honestly, I've been torn on what to feel about this reboot. On the one hand, The Crow is the single most influential movie of my entire life, and I want to see it preserved. The sequels got progressively worse, so there's no need to come back and beat a proverbial dead crow. Yet apparently, there are unresolved issues, see what I did there? With how the original movie and sequels portrayed the content of the graphic novel. To that end, O'Barr is heavily involved in the reboot, which bodes extremely well from the creative aspect of the flick. Jason Momoa is possibly, maybe, attached to play Eric Draven, which I honestly can't really comment on because I haven't watched anything he's in other than a really sick axe-throwing video. It'll be 24 years between films, so more than enough time has passed to be able to introduce the character and story to a whole new generation of fans, but I'm honestly skeptical. Momoa will bring in his fans. The faithful retelling of the graphic novel will bring in the aging goth crowd who ate it up when the original was released. But I hope I'm wrong, but I can't see the character connecting with the current younger crowd. I think the gothic overtones might keep the kiddies away. I sincerely hope I'm wrong, because I think the flick will be amazing. I just see it becoming a cult classic with us elder goths, much like the original did. Hey, remember The Last of Us? Of course you do, you covert camping tax shoddy scrub. Not only is it still alive, thanks to a certain tournament that may have guest commentary from yours truly, but apparently somebody still wants to make a movie out of it. Before you grab your tits in fear, no, it's not Uwe Boll. He's still retired, we're all still safe. What kind of confuses me is that it's also not Neil Druckmann, the guy who directed the actual video game. Turns out he did write a treatment, which is film speak for script, that took me way too long to learn that. But apparently he now hates the idea of a direct adaptation of the game, and has some pretty decent reasons for doing so. I remember reading some time ago that Troy Baker and Ashley Johnson would not be invited to reprise the roles of Joel and Ellie should the flick ever get to the point of being made. the fuck was that studio exec thinking? If the plan was to directly adapt the game, then Joel and Ellie, were already permacast, and you'd be stupid to try to change that. 5 years later in real life, and in-game, Joel and Ellie are still Troy and Ashley, as it should be. However, and this is actually a pretty big however, if the flick is still going forward as an aside to the game, we very well could have a different Joel and Ellie, or none at all. The game and expansion sort of took care of the beginning and how Ellie got bit, so a straight origin story wouldn't work. But what about a Tilu Rise of the Fireflies flick? Marlene has the potential to be an incredibly complex character, even from the short time spent with her in the game. We've also got 20 years to cover from Outbreak to current in-game time. I'm not suggesting covering all 20 years in one flick, because I already actually have hopes for a Tilu 3, but if we could get a cinematic introduction to the clickers and the cordyceps disease, if we could get a killer practical effects team on the transformation from human to infected, not to mention have the variety of infected all be represented. Can you imagine Robert Maillet, that's the really large guy who knocked out Robert Downey Jr. in Sherlock Holmes, as the big one, that clicker you gotta throw mollies at, all while watching the formation of the Fireflies along with their struggles and triumphs? Could make a very interesting plot. Methinks, anywho. For those interested, I'm not a Firefly apologist at all. In factions, I'm a hunter all the way, baby. To steal a quote I saw on Reddit, the only thing I feel when I kill a Firefly is recoil. Ah, the ESRB. What good are they? You know, I worked at a video game retailer for quite a while. I think around the time GTA 3 came out. Of course, that was rated M, and of course, children would attempt to purchase it. Rules is rules, and I harassed their parents to remind them that the game had blood, guts, gore, and hooker beatings. And I'd say about 60% of parents slapped their kids for trying to buy it. The other 40% said something along the lines of, "It's for him, it's invariably for him. Why do I care?" Now, I'm led to believe that many more parents these days just don't care about the maturity warnings on games. Science has proven that violent video games do not a violent offender make, so what's the harm? Turns out the ESRB actually now has a viable purpose, and parents have a viable reason to pay attention. The ESRB is going to start putting money warnings on video games, as in, this game costs you $70 now, and if your son is Crumb, it'll cost you at least $20 extra in Fortnite skins. So far. Apparently, they're only going to mark whether or not the game has purchasable loot boxes, because EA, Electronic Arts, apparently did something really bad that I wasn't really paying attention to, but it cost a lot of people a lot of money and they still couldn't win the game. So people were spending money, and to be real, I thought it'd be their own money, but that's just the adult in me speaking. The parents were getting insane credit card charges not related to their own porn habits, but from innocent gaming habits of their children, or adult man children. Most in-game purchases can't be refunded, so even after all the ass-whippings that took place, the parents were still on the hook for the cash, so the ESRB steps in to be a hero. I actually kind of dig this idea. Even though all of the in-game purchases are done through the console or PC that presumably only the gamer is watching at the time, at least the cardholder knows where they got screwed from. So yeah, want to make anyone pay attention to anything they're not really interested in? Tell them how much money they'll make, or how much money they'll lose. I'll be over here checking my PayPal balance because the new emotes are out and I need them all. It is the song of the week. Here comes the song of the week. It's much better than this. It's a hit you just can't miss. It's the song of the week. The song of the week this week is The Ocean and the Moon by Blood on the Dance Floor. I sometimes question myself for liking this band as much and as quickly as I've come to like them. Not really, but I honestly didn't expect to enjoy their brand of what I can only call emo dance as much as I do. Then they go and release The Ocean and the Moon, which is a new single off their soon-to-be-coming-out album. Ocean and the Moon is kind of their version of a ballad, and honestly, it makes me think of slightly dancier aesthetic perfection with female harmonies. And yeah, it really is that good. Go check it out. I'm still looking to feature industrial, metal, goth, or any other avant-garde musicians. All the contact info is in the show notes. Send me what you want me to play, and I'll actually play it as opposed to doing Spotify recommendations. That is all for this week, heathens and harlots. If you like what you heard, take 30 seconds to subscribe, rate, and review me on iTunes. No iTunes? The RSS link is right in the description. Copy that into your podcatcher of choice and tell two friends about the show. I'll be back next week for another round. You can catch up with me on all the social media from the links in the notes. You can also catch my beautiful face on Twitch randomly. The more you watch, the more I do it, so head there and give me a follow. For now, I leave you with the best advice I've never gotten. If you can't be good at it.